Welcome, friends. I'm so glad to invite you to join us today on our inaugural episode of the Emerge podcast. This is a project of our Climate Action Committee at Radnor Quaker Meeting and many other Quaker environmental activists and environmental groups, which hopefully we'll talk more about as we get into the conversation. I'm David Castro. I'm a member of Radnor Meeting, an active member of the Climate Action Committee at Radnor Meeting, and I've been a Quaker for more than a decade, and this project is near and dear to my heart.
My name is Lee Hall. I am a member of Radnor Meeting, Radnor Monthly Meeting, as we call it in Quakerese, and I'm also a member of the meeting's Climate Action Committee, as we all are here. Relative to David, I'm a new-ish Quaker, and while we're on that, I just have to say thanks to David for really inspiring me to join the Radnor Meeting. So that's where I'm at. I've been involved in environmental work for many years, and for a short time, I taught environmental law at Widener, which is a university and law school. The branch that I was at is in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware. So this is something that has been some work that I did with the Washington, as in D.C., Washington Ethical Society in 1997, when we were a group of us, very much like the Climate Action Committee here, gave an introduction to the kind of work we're doing here for the Washington Ethical Society. So sometimes I'm surprised how long I've been doing this, and I'm really glad to be doing it now at Radnor Meeting.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lee. And Sean Wen, I would love it if you would also introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Sean Wen. I'm a attend Radnor Meeting. I'm not an attender, not a member. And I also attend the Climate Action Committee, and I love the work that the people there do, and I'm very interested in it, and I'm very concerned with what is going on right now, and I hope I can do my best and do my best to help.
Thank you so much. So I thought I would lead into the topic today, which is really an effort to just provide a brief introduction to the core of our work, which is a project that we call Emerge. And we're going to go into what Emerge really consists of. But I want to say just a little bit about how we framed Emerge, how it got started. And it couldn't be a more appropriate time for us to be having this conversation as we're here in the middle of what's been really probably one of the most devastating periods to climate action work in the last, maybe even since the beginning of the work, I think you could say. We're here in the aftermath of the Trump administration actually having canceled or in the process of attempting to cancel one of the core scientific findings that underlies the entire movement and that is the foundation for regulating, attempting to regulate the impact of businesses on the climate through the emission of greenhouse gases. And that's probably just the icing on the cake. There's been so much more that has gone on this past year. And Emerge, in my view, Emerge really emerged from our really deep wrestling with what is going on and why it has been so difficult, not only for us to make progress, but actually, why are we witnessing the world backsliding in terms of commitment to climate-friendly, ecologically faithful policies? And one of the things that we really noticed and that has been prevalent, I think, in a recognition among activists is that the scientific arguments and the science of the day were not carrying the weight that we expected them to carry, and that leading with facts and the attempt to only address the rational elements of this were just coming up short. And our dialogue really at the Climate Action Committee came to, I think, a pretty profound discernment, which is that at the root of some of the problems we are facing is a crisis of values, you know? And I want to just frame this by saying, and I'm going to pass the baton to you in a minute, Lee, so get ready. But one of the key, I think, insights that I had drawn from our conversations is the insight that a lot of important policymaking in the climate action arena is about what kind of world you want to live in and why, and less about your recognition of what is happening and why it is happening. And I guess another way you could say this is that our values, in a really powerful way, frame our understanding of what we see in the world and what we're willing to do about it. You know, those are the core insights that I had. And it was really out of that conversation that this work at the level of values really, really came out. What more can we say about this, Lee, by way of a preamble?
Well, you just inspired some thought in my head about the intersectionality of what we're doing, that it's more than just what is happening scientifically with Earth systems, but it's also connected to the kind of humanity that we become. Yes, it looks dire. It is dire. The Trump regime is making a mess of things. And this is coming to a head right now. But that also happened in Minneapolis. And I don't want to downplay this in any way. People are getting severely hurt, severely harmed by what the Trump regime is doing. At the same time, what we saw rising up, what we are still seeing rising up in Minneapolis is phenomenal. To see people with the empathy that they are expressing right now, and to bring food to each other, almost to have an underground railroad to warn people and care for people. This is what's coming out of that crisis so far. And there is beauty in that. And by the same token, we're in a crisis with this government. And as you said, the environmental, what we need to behave like, what we need to do, the kind of structure that we need to do to keep emissions down. At the same time, we also know that people throughout this country and far beyond, that the environment doesn't know any countries or any borders, that humanity is thirsty for ways to change and for ways to emerge out of the mistakes that we've made and become truly responsible, a truly responsible species. We're working at the species level here as Quakers. So I suppose this work is among the most important we could possibly pick out at this time. We're Quakers. It's important that, and this is what's different than the way I've ever done this work in the past, that Quakers, they can be found in times of critical historical turning points, coming up, stepping up, and engaging something deeply within the person and within the community that can become a global movement. We saw this with abolition. We can see it again. I think what Emerge is doing is we're trying to become, to the extent that we can, a catalyst for something different within ourselves, within Radnor Meeting, within our greater communities. That's why we're here. What is it, as you said, putting the science aside for the moment of what we're working with, what is it that's the catalyst for us becoming a truly Earth respectful community? A community that's respectful of not only Earth systems, but all living communities we live among. How do we get that feeling that, yes, we're here, we're mindful of our greater living community, and we are going to take responsibility and accountability to become dedicated environmentalists because we love our Earth, its systems, and the other living communities with whom we're really a part and not above. And it's not up to us to take, to be.
So let me Yeah, Lee, wonderful. Let me jump in here and just for our listeners, decode some of this so that we can at least get it out on the table. So we're talking about Emerge, and Emerge actually is an acronym for a set of testimonies that we have had some discernment and around their really fundamental role in the, I would say, the climate advocacy movement. And as I was listening to you, Lee, it made me realize that some of these testimonies probably cut across a variety of other prophetic witness that we might have about the wrongs in the world. You know, they're part of a shared root of the social justice tree that we are trying to help grow. And but testimonies also, just to explain to people who are listening what testimonies are in Quaker culture. So testimonies are statements about really about values and about how we would want to live in the world, what kinds of things we would want to see in the world. So they're very creative in their orientation about calling forth a certain kind of way of living in the world with certain kinds of results. And actually, it's interesting, as we were preparing for this conversation, we were talking about what is the difference between speaking from prophetic witness? How is that different than a scientific view of the world? And I think, you know, when you're taking a scientific view of the world, you're suggesting that everything you need to know about this situation could be discovered in the world if you were patient enough to look for it and find the patterns that exist. And what we see with prophetic witness is that's not true, that we are, as living beings, engaged in a dance with the world in which we call forth new things out of it. We build new things by the energy that we bring. And the best example of this that I can give, you know, is ironically from the Declaration of Independence, you know, where Jefferson says, you know, all human beings are created equal. And I would say, if you were to attempt to try to scientifically prove that statement to be true, you would really come up short. There is not evidence that all human beings are created equal, and there is not proof of it. But nevertheless, it is an animating moral thought, and one that ties into some critical ideas that we share as Quakers about the divine being present inside each person. When we say there is that of God in each person, we are zeroing in on our expectation that we will all be treated and valued equally, you know, in the world. So equality, our commitment to equality, which is a core Quaker testimony, is a great example of the difference between what I would describe as prophetic witness and scientific witness, not the same thing. So without further ado, I just want to call out what this acronym stands for, and we can dive into it a little bit. But EMERGE stands for empathy, that's the first E, mindfulness, ecological integrity, right action, growth, and endurance. And what we are advocating, I guess you could say, in the folks that are gathered around EMERGE, is a call to these testimonies and values as a foundational way of having a different presence in the world and calling forth a different kind of growth and development and aspiration than what we see. And I think we're asking a very profound question, which is, how would the world be different if we lived out these values in our decision-making and in our actions on a daily basis? So that's what we want to initially explore in this conversation. And it's going to be initial because we don't have enough time. We could probably be here for days talking about this, and we're not going to be here for days. We're going to be here for a few minutes. But I want to, Xiangwen, I want to return to you and just ask you to comment a little bit on what you're thinking about this movement in general and the testimonies that we're trying to capture in this word EMERGE.
So I've always been like devastated and depressed by, like, when I see, like, on the news or in books, when I look at or read about, like, all the animal species going extinct, disappearing. And so, like, some things I've read about in, like, science books, I read in a science book that if global warming keeps on continuing, the polar ice caps, like the ice over there, there is carbon dioxide trapped in the ice. If that ice melts, that gas is going to go around the world and make things even worse. And I guess it can't really go back. And so that's one thing. And then, like, when oceans get polluted, I saw this really disturbing video of a clam getting in contact with polluted water and melting, gone, completely gone. It was so disturbing to look at. And so what I think is, and Lee mentioned, we can't just it's not just science and facts. As people, we need to have an awakening ourselves and to realize that we need to change. We need to actually know that we are living in this world and that we need to care about it, or else everyone suffers. We suffer, animals suffer. Well, humans are animals. Everyone suffers. The and things will get worse. So, like, testimony here, I have the Emerge book. And so right from the Emerge book, testimony, it calls us to act outside our personal comfort zones. And it calls us to take up the hard work of telling other people to maybe also step out of their comfort zones. And I also heard somebody say, we can, but this is the hard part. We can lead people to the water to drink, but then it really, the decision is theirs whether they drink it or not. And so I'm very that this it's very concerning, the situation that is going on, and I do hope that things will be done and that we can help protect this earth.
Thank you so much. I think that's so right on. And I want to call out an example that you gave because I think it's a powerful illustration of two of the testimonies. And you talked about you're thinking about the experience of a clam, you know, as in this environment, what's going to happen to it. And I think it's such a beautiful thing to think that we could care about what happens to a clam. Like, why would we care about what happens to a clam? Can we get inside the head of a clam, so to speak, into its spiritual being and really have a heart for the clam, like what is going to happen to the clam. And not only that, but the mindfulness, like to note that mindfulness, you know, of that we can care enough to look and ask the question, what would happen to the clam? You know, because so much of it is, it's so easy for us to be in a head where we're only thinking about ourselves and are we going to be okay without thinking about what's happening out there to other creatures. So, Lee, I know that so much of your work has been around thinking with great empathy and mindfulness about the animal community. And so I wonder if you could build on those two, empathy and mindfulness, and then maybe even bridge us a little bit into ecological integrity. Go for it.
Well, I think present company just did wonderful work with empathy and mindfulness. So, ecological integrity. As you just said a few minutes ago, the Quakers are committed. One of the long-standing values of Quakerism is equality. And of course, that includes equity, making sure that everybody does have the ability to participate fully as a human being within the culture. And so the ecological integrity, once we become integrated, once we understand humanity is integrated with the ecology, we're doing something with equality there. Again, we're not apart and above. We're not better than as humans. And I think that Quakers are uniquely positioned to go there. Many spiritual traditions haven't really gone into that territory. I mean, the idea is that there's dominion and we have it. And so if we're going to use it in a generous way, then it's going to be stewardship. And we are still going to be basically in charge, but which way? Maybe in a more humane way of being in charge. Now, when we see advocacy for other animal communities, that becomes a question. Are we just working to leave the system in place, but do it everything a little bit more humanely? And does that make us good humans? Or really, should we be looking for profound change in humanity's way of viewing these other living communities, so that we're looking at liberation from our control and not just stewardship? I hope that goes some way into bringing that on to ecological integrity.
That's such a great introduction to ecological integrity, this idea about, you know, seeing ourselves as bound up with and part of nature. And I was thinking about the way in which ecological integrity really points us beyond or allows us to transcend this idea of stewardship into an idea that's more like what we talk about as kinship, you know, where we are part of, we are alongside, we are with nature and not lording over it. And I was thinking about like the reinterpretation even of some of our core Judeo-Christian narrative. I was thinking about the powerful image of the flood and the ark, you know. And one of the things that I think is deeply encoded in the story of the ark is the concept of biodiversity, you know, the idea that Noah is confronted with this ecological cataclysm, you know, an event that threatens all life. And much like we are seeing right now, you know, a form of the flood, you know, something that in which we recognize that we are all bound together. And this part of the story that he doesn't just get on the boat, but he makes room for all of the animals. And I note that the animals are not domesticated animals. They are all animals, all forms of life. So we have this wonderful image of all forms of life being together and vastly, you would imagine, outnumbering the humans. So one of the things I like to think about is like the scale of the ark in terms of human importance is very appropriate. Like, you know, the ratio of humans to other creatures, you know, and all being in it together and not in it only for the spoils, you know, or the consumption, or the, I guess you might say, the objectification of, or the use, industrial process. So I think there's really a lot to be drawn from that about biodiversity and ecological integrity in that image. And I think this is true of a lot of our religious ideas. If we go back, we're not abandoning them. We're reinterpreting them in a way that's better, you know. So, but I want to move on to, because we have three more that we want to touch on here. And I want to go on to right action, you know, which is, I think, this powerful question, and I know one that we wrestle with constantly now at Radner, which is, what are we called to do in this moment? Like, and how are we able to translate our concerns into meaningful actions, you know, so that make a difference? And so I'm throwing the floor open to both Sean Wen and Lee to comment about right action and why it's so important for us to take up right action as part of this discernment.
Well, now that a clam has been brought up, I can say, I could posit for you an example from my own life with right action. And that's that I, as Sean Wen did with clams, I read about a particular kind of bird community, to be specific, sandpipers, and to be more specific, the Hudsonian godtwits. And they go all the way from way down South America, which, as Bad Bunny would say, is America, and all the way up to Canada or the north area of Alaska, right? The Hudson Bay, that's why Hudsonian godtwits. And we know that's America. And when they get there, you know, they do that flight, those thousands of miles without stopping for sleep or food. And when they get there, because of the change of the climate zones that were it's part of human-driven climate crisis, their food is no longer there. Spring has come earlier. And what that means is when they go to that space where they need to lay their eggs, right, they lay them. But imagine coming all that way without food or sleep, and you have your eggs, and when those babies hatch, there's nothing for them to eat. There's none of those little small snails on the sand. And as Xiang Wen felt, I was overwhelming to me. The grief that what I was doing had caused. The next time I went to fuel up my car, I looked at my hand on the pump, and that's when I said, I'm making a resolution. I'm going to stop. And I became car-free, so now I'm going into my third year of being car-free. But I don't want to participate in something that is going to disrespect that community of sandpipers. I can't handle it. It's immensely sad. So this conversation has sort of led that way, and that's one example. And I have found that being car-free, not everyone can do it. I realize that. That's hard for me to do it. But I realize that the hardship involved in it is a great gift. I've become, and I know this as myself and what I sense and the thoughts that I have from day to day, I have become a participant rather than somebody who's involved in paving over the earth. And to me, that is a declaration of peace.
So powerful, Li. Thank you. Xiang Wen, any thoughts to add at this moment?
When Li mentioned like bird communities and migration, and so with global warming, when that happens, like because the temperature really, it just messes things up. Sometimes birds will stop migrating because it's not necessary because like the temperature has changed, and then they will start to compete with the usually native bird species. And so there are they not migratory birds anymore? So it's just that is not natural. That should not be happening. And with carbon dioxide and like emissions from like cars. So I also know that like when people like when some people come to like clean up like leaves and blow leaves or like other things, there was a video of people using a special camera to capture what was happening with that. And it showed all of the carbon dioxide coming out of that machine that they were using, all of it. And sometimes I can smell it, and it's not nice to smell. So that is also a problem. Like, people are so nearsighted. Maybe that's why I have glasses. Well, because of that, like, they're going to do things that are so easy to them. Like, okay, carbon dioxide, you know, okay, it's efficient. Like, it can get things done quickly, but, like, they don't see into the future what if, like, it's going to cause problems for the Earth, like, after a few years or after a time. So that is also an issue. And with like a lot of people as well, like, oh, you know what, like, I've been putting like my recycling, I've been putting my trash in my trash, but then like some people do it and it's not enough. Some people say it, but they don't even do it. So I've always been careful with that. Here where I live, certain glass can actually be recycled. And so when I wash the dishes, I also make sure to like wash the glass, and after I dry, I put that in the place where designated to be recycled. And so I made sure of that. And some of my relatives, they didn't know that. I was like, glass can actually be recycled. They were like, are you sure? And they're like, you know what, just throw it away. But I was like, no, it can be. And later they did some research on it and they found out, I was right, it could be recycled. And so now we've been doing that.
That's awesome. I think one of the things that, you know, your both of your comments raised for me in thinking about right action is connected to the next value, which is the value of growth, and particularly the idea that at this moment we are, as a whole culture, I think, really in a crisis around what is the value of growth. And if you look at a lot of, we had a forum recently at Radnor where we were looking at actually our value around what we called stewardship and sustainability. And we talked about the work of a Quaker economist, Kenneth Boulding, and talked about the one of the, Kenneth Boulding's ideas, the cowboy economy, which is this concept of an endless frontier in which you can continue to consume and continue to do bigger and bigger and more energy expensive things. And you never encounter any limit. And before this conversation today, Lee was talking about the tragedy of the commons, which is, I think, exactly the same idea as the cowboy economy. It's the idea that, well, there's this unlimited resource out there that we can just consume, and our own personal consumption will never come to an end. And whatever we do selfishly for ourselves, it will never have any meaning to anyone else. And it turns out that that is just not true, that you know, that we live not on an open frontier, but we in fact live, you know, and you could, there's a lot of metaphors for this. One of the ones that Balding uses is the spaceship. But it, essentially what it means is that we're in a closed system in which, you know, when I take too much and when I use resources mindlessly and recklessly, I'm actually creating waste for other people and ultimately for myself. You know, there is no way for me to endlessly consume without at the end of that process damaging myself in the process. And so this idea of growth is such an important and difficult idea, because when you sit and really think about what is balanced growth, what environmentally sustainable growth, what is spiritually healthy growth, and what you come to often is that less is more, you know, that doing less is more, using less is more, wanting less is more. And we discover the spiritual gifts. And this ties into another one of our Quaker values around simplicity. But when I see, you know, and Lee's written some beautiful things about this, about the discovery of the great beauty in giving things up, what is acquired, the power, the spiritual power of what is acquired when we give up things that we don't really need. And I want to say, I think Lee is writing in a great Quaker tradition here, because John Woolman, another one of our heroes, really, as a Quaker, has written hundreds of years ago about the same thing, discovering, you know, the spiritual power and beauty in living, you know, within your means. And so this is really a profound thing, growth. Like, what do we mean by growth? Yeah. So I open the floor, Lee. Sean Wen, do you have any other ideas to add to that?
Well, you say living within our means, and we're really living on a finite planet. And so now we know we're living within the safe operating system of Earth's. What, rather than only talking about within our means as an economic idea, it becomes an ecological idea. And yes, there is joy in simplicity. And bringing growth into a vivid example of personal growth, of spiritual growth, is something that we did in the booklet, in the Emerge booklet. And I think it's really worth articulating right now. And it's Gus Speth. And that was the person who served as the administrator of the United Nations Sustainable Development Group. So we see development, right? Growth, right? Beth once thought that the top global environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and climate change. Speth has since written, "But I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed, and apathy. And we scientists don't know how to do that. We need, and to deal with those, we need a spiritual and cultural transformation. And we scientists don't know how to do that." So here you see somebody who's got scientific authority, scientific expertise, how often do you hear a scientist saying, actually, I was wrong, starting there, and then saying the growth in somebody personally to say, actually, the problems were selfishness, greed, and apathy, and we scientists don't have an answer for that. We need to see a spiritual and cultural transformation. So one person shifting like that and transforming internally like that and reaching out to all of us as humans for that spiritual and cultural transformation. What beautiful growth in a person.
Thank you, Lee. And Sean Nguyen, I want to invite you to sort of help us to move to close out the conversation by picking up this last value testimony that we have put into Emerge, which is this idea of endurance and thinking about, I often think of endurance, I'll just frame it initially and say that, you know, I think we're all thinking about endurance because it does seem that every day we get up, we're living in a worse situation. You know, that's been the feeling of the last several, certainly the last year, and I think you could say before that. And we have to draw strength from our faith that we can make the world better. We can move in the right direction if we bring our, you know, courage and our spirit-informed commitment to the work that we have in front of us. But we can't do any of this without endurance. And as the youngest person in our conversation by many decades, I want to ask you to maybe talk to our listeners about endurance and passion. I know that when we were getting ready for this, you were telling us how important this conversation was to you. So maybe you share some of that.
So, like, going back to what Lee said about the quotes. So that also reminded me of one time I attended an event hosted by Lee, and where we were talking about like when faced with the truth, and it may very likely be the ugly truth, it is not effective to to run away from it, to be like, oh, it's so terrible, I can't bear it, I'm gonna run away from it, I don't want to think about it because it's so terrible. But it is actually to accept that fact that this is what is going on, and not be so afraid or disappointed in why are people so terrible, why are they so selfish, but to think about it, this is the situation, what can I do about it, and not to run away from it. Running away is only going to make it worse. And so, talking about endurance, so right now I'm looking at the Emerge book, and so it basically is a spiritual awakening. It is to know that, when I actually care about the world, things will get better. And it's not just one person, taking up, all the resources, thinking that they have all the resources, thinking that things won't run out. Because, things happen slowly, to people. It's not I'm gonna drive my car, and then tomorrow, the whole world, it's not gonna be like that. It is slower. It's definitely slower than that, but the damage is happening. And so what we need to do, we really need to care about the world, care about what is happening, and try to do our best to fix the damage that has been caused.
Thank you so much for that. That's a great place, I think, for us to land this. So this is just an introduction, and what we're hoping to do in the succeeding episodes of our podcast is to really do a deep dive into these values. We're going to plan to engage some leading environmental Quaker advocates and people involved deeply in the work to join us in this conversation. And so, Lee, tell our audience, where can they find out more about Emerge on the web? And also, if they want a copy of our booklet, how can they request one?
What is our Gmail? Let me just look that up because I want to go to the, your first question first. And I believe our Gmail is emergevalues@gmail.com.
That sounds right.
Okay. So that is a good way. And of course, we could put it, once you put this on the web, we can put the caption there and the
Yeah.
how to get Emerge booklets. And I have to say, Emerge booklets are, they're going like hotcakes. All right. So if you want one, speak up. I think we're going to soon get to the point where we're going to do a revision. And then there's our web presence, and you can find that in a couple of places right now. We have a link through Radnor Meeting, which is radnorquakers.net. That's on the top bar. But you can also go directly to emergevalues.org. And also at this time, now we're speaking on the 15th of February, 2026. And this year, all the way through summer solstice, you can find events on the Quaker Earth Care Witness website or look at events. And you may need to scroll down because there's a calendar there. So you may need to dig a little, but just look for events on Quaker Earth Care Witness, and you'll see that we are having ongoing meditations every month, a different letter. And it's a wonderful spiritual practice that I think is I know it's catalyzing more in me, and I've heard that kind of feedback from others who are participating. We're doing a very special thing. We are doing experiment with light to do our best to replicate how the earliest Quakers gathered together and did their spiritual meetings. And we're bringing Emerge, and we're combining it with that kind of meditation that they brought together and that kind of spiritual discernment that they did together.
So thank you so much, Lee. Thank you, Sean Wen. This has been a wonderful conversation. Listeners, Emerge is empathy, mindfulness, ecological integrity, right action, growth, and endurance. Come back and find us on the web. Come back and listen to us again. We're looking forward to the next time that we're together with you.